this is D.L. Hudson. Welcome to Church and Culture. This show is devoted to exploring the interaction between our faith and our culture. Each week, I will talk with expert guests on topics ranging from literature, art, and music to politics, liturgy, spirituality, and education. Thank you for joining us.
I have a brand new guest today on Church and Culture. It's actually someone I've known for a long time, though I've been out of touch, and I'm so glad to be back in touch. Siobhan Nash Marshall holds the Mary T. Clark Chair of Christian Philosophy at Manhattanville College. And for those of you who don't know the name Mary T. Clark, she was one of the great Thomistic philosophers of the post-war era. And we now have Siobhan on the phone, who is filling her very big shoes. Siobhan is the author of many academic books and articles on metaphysics and the problem of evil, but she's also written for the general public a spiritual biography of Joan of Arc and What It Takes to Be Free, Religion and the Roots of Democracy. Well, that's needed more than ever. In recent years, Siobhan has devoted a lot of attention to genocide and to the notion of genocide negationism, which we'll talk about. Her most recent book, The Sins of the Fathers, Turkish Denialism and the Armenian Genocide, was published by Herder & Herder, 2018, also in Italian and in Armenian. Since the breakout of the war in Syria, Siobhan and some friends founded CINF USA, through which they are attempting to help ancient Christian cultures around the world that are presently in danger. Siobhan, welcome to Church and Culture.
Hello, Dio. I have missed you.
Same here. I'm just so glad that we have caught up with each other.
By the grace of God.
We knew each other when I was teaching in Fordham, and Siobhan there was writing her dissertation. You know, this book you've written for Herder & Herder, The Sins of the Fathers, it is stunningly good. And for a lot of different reasons, but the one that really jumped out at me was your discussion of why it is we have so much trouble understanding evil acts. You know, whether it's evil individually or evil, the evil done by Turkey toward the Armenians. Mm-hmm. And how that connects with denialism. Mm-hmm. And your discussion of that just, I thought, was so clear and so precise. And let me just set up this issue this way by asking this question. You know, people look out the window and they see people with face masks and hoods. And they have, you know, they fire laser guns at the eyes of police officers, or they would have beat up somebody for being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And the first thing that goes through your mind is, why would anybody do that? Mm-hmm. You know, what is going on? And, of course, this often comes to mind when we think about the Shoah of Hitler, or the famine of Stalin and in the Ukraine, or Mao. But try to describe to our listeners how it is you have explained this our inability to get our arms around evil acts.
Well, you know, I think that evil is essentially irrational. I keep on going back, and I know we've discussed this over the year when I was a student, to Augustine, who's trying to understand why he stole the pears.
Remind our listeners that story.
Oh, well, it's an amazing story. And Augustine, as he's writing down the history of his life, he, of course, gives the unvarnished picture, the beautiful and the unbeautiful, and he asks himself all sorts of questions about himself. And one of the big questions he asks himself is that when he was a child, he was an adolescent, unruly and as men should be when they're very young. I mean, he was the one who famously coined the phrase, give me chastity and give me confidence, but not yet.
Right.
And he's this manly young man, and he and his rowdy friends go out, and they decide that they're going to steal some pears off of a tree. And he asked himself the question, why did I steal those pears? And he couldn't come up with a reason. He said, as soon as we picked them, we threw them out. I didn't like them. They didn't taste good. They weren't beautiful. I couldn't earn any money off of them. And I can find no reason for me to steal those pears all those years later. And I think that if we're honest with ourselves and we ask ourselves why we do things that are evil, and we all do, let's be honest, at the end of the day, we're going to come up with something that is, we can't find a reason. And I think that's what makes evil so obsessive for us, when we try to find reasons why people have done something to us. And we have all been betrayed in one way, shape, or form. Why did Judas betray Jesus? I don't think anyone can find a reason for it. There is no reason. Even evil is unintelligible. And that's why the ancients, and if you look back to the Aquinas and to the Augustines, and even go back to the Platos, they're going to say evil is a privation. That there is no intelligible reason for it.
Well, privation, let's explain that to our listeners, meaning that...
It's like a hole in the ground.
It's a hole in being.
Like a hole.
Yes.
It's a hole. And I keep on thinking that many people today say evil is this positive thing, it's this real thing. They even go to the point to say that there's such a thing as an evil gene or whatever. Well, there's nothing... more nonsensical, because their argument says evil has real effects. And I say to them, well, you know, if you are a New Yorker, and I'm a New Yorker, when you walk down the street, especially these days, they're full of potholes. And you have to be careful, because a pothole can break your ankle.
Or your car, or it can, and
evil is this hole in yourself. It's this lack of something that should be there. Be it compassion, being thinking it through, being control, self-control. Henry VIII, for instance, lacked self-control. It's clear. The man and Scarsbrick wrote a long biography. But if you look through the Hitlers, he was dreaming, doing something for insane reasons, no real reasons.
Except to satisfy his own mood and his own, try to make up for his sense of failure as an artist.
Exactly. And when we take those emotions too seriously, and emotions are lack of rationality, that's another thing these days. We live at a time when people say to us, oh, I feel this way, or I feel that way.
Right.
It's become so much part of our language that my students don't even say, I believe this, or I think this.
Yeah.
They tell me, I feel this.
I used to tell my students, I don't care how you feel. Tell me what you think.
Exactly. You know what I ask them now?
What
do you feel it with? Your hands? And if you're going to replace your thoughts with that, well, then you get the Shoah.
You do. Now.
And then you get the Armenian Genocide, and you get the Holodomor, the Ukrainians you mentioned, or you get the Great Leap Forward.
Is of Mao. And is there any... has there been any polling done to try to determine what percentage of the American people are even aware that this genocide at the beginning of the 20th century occurred?
Not that I know of.
What would you guess, because you've been involved in this for a number of years?
Well, I'd say about 10% maybe.
Yet, 20. What percent would have heard of the Holocaust?
Oh, all of them.
Well, except for some recent high school graduates.
Well, they don't hear about anything.
They don't get history at all. So
no, I can't tell because they're taking down statues of Ulysses S. Grant and Jesus Christ because he was a white man. Where they get a white man, I don't know.
Well, they took down Frederick Douglass.
I know they did.
Unbelievable.
Oh, my God. I know.
So explain, just outline what the Armenian Genocide was. Of course, your book, it brilliant, lays it out so clearly, much more clear. I've read several of the books on this. Yours was the clearest, and it really made me understand why the Turks thought genocide was necessary, because mm-hmm. as you say, they were trying to create a state that didn't exist.
Yep.
So tell our listeners about that.
Well, do you mind if I just give it a preface before I explain to it?
No, go right ahead.
What I'd like to say is I also wrote my book for our country, too, because we have the same mechanism going on, and it's people who are trying to create something which isn't there. But the story is simple. The Armenians are the oldest Christian nation. They're the first Christian nation. And John Paul II, St. John Paul II, acknowledged this. The popes had tried to save them ever since the 1860s. They live in a crossroads, in a terrible, terrible place to live, because they're always stuck between invaders who come from the Far East, the Mongols, for instance, and then invaders who come from the West, and they've always been stuck between the hammer and the anvil. To make a long story short, come the 19th century, so, you know, we're talking 200 years ago, roughly, the Ottoman Empire starts crumbling. And the Ottoman Empire was, just for your listeners, they're the ones who were defeated by the Poles at the gates of Vienna. They were trying to conquer Europe. And they reached all the way up to the gates of Vienna, and they were stopped by the Poles. And then they also were the ones who were defeated at the Battle of Lepanto. So they were trying to conquer all of Europe, and newsflash, they're still trying to do it.
Right.
The Ottoman Empire 200 years ago was crumbling. And for two reasons. First of all, because... It was a very repressive empire if you lived in the Middle East. Still today, the Arabs and everyone who's not a Turk really do not like Turks. And they were losing, you know, limb after limb, you know, piece after piece. And so first they lost Algeria, Morocco, and then they're starting to lose the Balkan states. So that means modern-day Serbia, and then the Greeks all of a sudden decide that they want their independence, and so here we're jumping up to the 1820s, and they're noticing that piece after piece they're losing everything, and that they just can't hold on. So what they decide to do is clean up one piece of territory which they were convinced they would never lose, and that was what is modern-day Turkey. The problem there was that you had ancient peoples who lived there, and they were Christians. And then some of them are not. So one of them were the Armenians. And as I said, they're the oldest Christian nation, and they've been around for a long time.
Well, they declared themselves Christian, I think, in 300 AD, around
there.
That's
right. That's right. 301. And then they had the coasts, who were the Greeks. And so the fathers of philosophy, for instance, Thales and whatever, they came from the coasts of modern-day Turkey. And when St. Paul goes through the cities in the New Testament, when we see the letters to the Ephesians and whatnot, those are towns in modern-day Turkey that were held by the Greeks until the 1920s, until 23. But what happened was they decided that in this piece of land, they had to cancel all of history. They had to erase it to make it theirs. And they didn't have a culture. They had no culture of their own. People said, we don't have a culture, so they're intellectuals. And they were reading the books of modern philosophy, these intellectuals, from Germany. and France. And so this whole slew of people who believe we have to make a perfect world and are not afraid of killing anyone who gets in their way. Now, they have been reading these books. They're afraid of having absolutely no place to go. They refuse to make peace with the Christians. Refuse to make peace with the Armenians or with the Greeks. And they decide at that point that what they're going to do is just whitewash the whole territory. Whitewashing meant killing 3/4 of the Armenian nation. That means 1.5 million people. They killed the men on the spot. The women they marched into the desert, or they sold as slaves. They crucified. They did everything possible to these people. They destroyed their churches, about 2,500 of them. They destroyed their schools, about 1,500 of them. And in order to keep this going, you see, in order to make sure that no one came and claimed the land back, they've been lying about it since 1923. And government after government has let them do this. The first American president who actually sat back and called it the Armenian Genocide was Ronald Reagan.
Are you serious? It took that long?
Yeah, it did.
That's what you mean by denialism.
That's right.
And
it took us that long.
Yet, certainly, scholars, historians, others, Armenian, witnesses,
mm-hmm.
had made it clear to the world. There were serious books and so forth about it.
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't the United States recognize this as genocide?
We were in a Cold War, and Turkey had a strategic position. That's the long and the short of it.
I mean, we needed Turkey as an ally.
That's right. We had Jupiter missiles in Turkey.
Right.
That were pointed at Moscow. It was considered, and it's one of those things that I think we're paying the price for now. When the truth becomes politically expendable, when you can lie for convenience, when a culture is not based in truth, it will destroy itself.
One of the central points, if not the central point you make in your book, is that there is the time of the atrocity itself. In the case of the Armenians, how many years did it last?
Well, from 1918 till about 1922.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But that the denial of the atrocity is itself an atrocity, a genocide. Mm-hmm. That, in other words, you have the historic event, but mm-hmm. then the denial that follows is in a way continuing the atrocity, the genocide, forward into history. Did I explain that?
Oh, absolutely.
Correctly?
But just think about it, Dale, from our point of view. I mean, I'm sorry if I'm going to switch to my country. It's just that it's something that I can see, the pattern I see repeating. George Washington wasn't a saint. No one ever said he was. We never, ever said he was. Sure, he freed his slaves, as I said. He had slaves. We understand. We all sin. But when they start denying our history, how much are they wounding our country?
Deeply.
How much are they wounding each of us?
Deeply.
Now imagine being the victim of a genocide and hearing someone tell you it never happened.
Well, if you had a grandfather, great-grandfather, a whole family wiped out.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And yet you're being told by, as in some cases, as you saw, American scholars who evidently mm-hmm. were being, financed
right.
by Turkey, right,
mm-hmm.
That it didn't exist.
That's right.
I mean, that feels like rape in a way.
It is. And that, I think, is one of the reasons I think why we... For several reasons, I'm just going to think this. Number one, We never, ever talk about how many Christians were slaughtered in the 20th century.
In the Holocaust, right.
Or in the Holocaust. Do you know what the number is for the 20th century? One of the estimates of Christians killed in the 45 million.
And that's taking all the genocidal acts
that's
together.
Right. Stalin, all of them together. And Hitler, all of them. They all went after the Christians. Do you know how many apparently are being killed per year today?
Tell us.
About 100,000 a year.
In the Middle East?
In the Middle East, in Indonesia, in the Far East. Yep, Africa. Africa.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we hear those horrid tales.
Yep, you've got Boko Haram going nuts, and you've got, but that Boko Haram is the tip of the iceberg. And if you look at the numbers, you wonder why it is that no one stands up and says, this is enough. Enough. We are told that from the blood of martyrs, right, the church is what? What is the expression deal? The blood of martyrs is something for the church.
Springs leaven faith. For the yeah, yeah.
But, you know, there's no reason to pretend it never happened. And if we don't stand up for the Armenians, right now, just to give you an idea, the denial is like denying our own history, just magnified, because we have not suffered from a genocide. But
they're
still in danger.
Yeah, and the Armenian, there is a Republic of Armenia now that broke away from the Soviet Union, correct?
Right, that's correct.
And it's been there, what, since 1989?
That's right. That's exactly right.
And so they've got their own country, but now they're, you sent me some videos, and now they're being threatened again with attack.
Yep. Yep.
And where is that coming from?
Turkey and Azerbaijan.
Will the world, will we, the United States, allow them to do that again?
Well, you know, this is, I don't know if we're in a position, if they're just taking advantage of our own weakness. Because at the moment, we have fires that we have to put out. I think this is the time when, I hate to use the expression, but we red-blooded Americans, I don't care what color skin you have, but if you're an American, it's time to remember who you are and what we stand for. And since we're having our own little civil war, a cultural one, I don't think we're in a position to unite. And that's why I think they're putting Armenia in danger again. Because
they can get away with it.
Yeah, that's right.
I want to remind our listeners, I'm talking to Siobhan Nash Marshall, who teaches at Manhattanville College. She's the Mary T. Clark Chair of Christian Philosophy there, and we're talking about her book on the Armenian Genocide entitled The Sins of the Fathers, Turkish Denialism and the Armenian Genocide. Now, Turkey continues to deny this genocide, correct?
Yes, it's illegal in Turkey to mention it.
This is again one of those moments when you confront the irrational and you hardly know what to say. How can they get away with that?
Again, it's irrational. How we let them get away with it, I do not know. I do not know. We realize, you know, it's like suicide, slow suicide. Deal, you've got the irrational all over the place. You've got abortion. How can that be rational? New York State has passed the law that you can have an abortion in the ninth month, and they don't call it murder.
Boy, when Catholics go bad, they go really bad, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you've got the Cuomos of the world who had become, I've always noticed that when you have a Catholic that goes bad, they go to the worst extreme, like Chris Cuomo. No, wait.
And, by the way, Mary T. Clark, whom you mentioned before, wrote a letter to Nancy Pelosi. Because Nancy Pelosi wrote or mentioned that she was fine with abortion because Augustine was fine with abortion. And Mary Clark, who was a great scholar, if you
know. One of the great Augustine scholars.
She wrote Nancy Pelosi a letter and said, I have been studying Augustine for 69 years. I have not come across that passage. Could you please tell me where it is?
She never heard back.
No, she didn't. When Catholics go bad, they go very bad.
And there's probably a reason for that, but we can discuss that on another show. Right now we're going to take a short break. Again, been talking to Dr. Siobhan Nash Marshall from Manhattanville College. We'll be right back.
On the next Cresta in the Afternoon.
There are those who would reduce Jesus from Lord of creation to a mere social justice prophet, railing against unjust social structures. Jesus' concern and care for the poor, of course, is central to his mission. But to minimize his divinity is to get him wrong. We'll talk it over with Father Brian Mullady.
Cresta in the Afternoon from 4 to 6 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popcha.
How can parents raise faithful kids in a faithless world? A 50-year study of over 3,500 people found that the degree of parental warmth kids experience in religious households was the single biggest factor in determining whether children would become faithful adults. As I summarize in my book, Discovering God Together, The Catholic Guide to Raising Faithful Kids, children are most likely to become faithful adults when they've experienced the faith as the source of the warmth in their homes. The same study found that rates of faith retention in kids skyrocketed when religious dads took point on practices that contributed to a warm, faithful household. Things like generous affection, maintaining strong family rituals, and gentle approaches to discipline. God created parents to give kids a physical sign of his love. The more warmth our kids experience in our presence, the more warmly they'll feel to the God who loves them through us. I'm Dr. Greg Popcheck, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Ever thought you'd make a bundle by trading in or selling your used vehicle only to find out it's worth a dinner for two? Well, it's much more valuable to donate your vehicle to Ave Maria Radio. Thousands of Americans donate their vehicle each year. The donation to Ave Maria is easy, tax-deductible, and supports our efforts to evangelize. A year from now, will you remember that dinner or your gracious and selfless donation? Go to AveMariaRadio.net to find out more. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Dr. Siobhan Nash Marshall from Manhattanville College, who holds the Mary T. Clark Chair of Christian Philosophy. She's done a lot of publishing, but we're focusing on her book about the Armenian Genocide and the damage that continues to be done when there is denial, not just of that genocide, but any and all genocides. And, of course, you may have seen, Siobhan, I know you're abroad right now. There was a film made on for Amazon Prime called Mr. Jones, which was a movie about the New York Times correspondent in Moscow who tried to get the New York Times to print stories about the deliberately set Ukrainian famine by Stalin that killed over 3 million people.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the proof. You know, he had the smoking gun, but the New York Times would not print it.
Mm-hmm.
And so here they are all proud of their moral righteousness, but they ignored one of the major genocides of the 20th century.
Can I ask you a question, Dan?
Sure, of course.
What do you think the cost of denying historical facts is in the short run and the long run?
What do I think the cost is in the short run?
Yeah, of denying historical facts.
I think most people look to people like you and me to assure them they're not crazy.
That's exactly right.
And the problem is now that, you know, a lot of people, you know, work hard on social media to stay in touch with people like us, to convince them that they're not crazy and this is as absurd and asinine as it appears to be.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are a lot of families in America that they don't have any real connection to the traditional understanding of America, the real understanding, and you know the basic moral sense that we all grew up with, which is, in fact, grounded in real moral truth. And I think those people are lost. I think that when you have... 20 or so murders every weekend in Chicago. When you have, you know, Columbia-trained lawyers throwing Molotov cocktails at police cars in New York City, the short term is confusion, fear, and everybody's buying guns. Because they believe that at some point it's going to come to their doorstep.
And in the long run?
In the long run, we win.
Oh, absolutely. We've been promised that. That's the apocalypse. We know
Well, I'm not talking about the apocalypse. I think in the long run, we win because this really is the leadership of the... anarchists, let's call them that, or nihilists, are really a very small group of people, but they have achieved systematic authority in governments, small governments, local governments, state, and so forth, in the media especially. Journalism schools have been corrupt for 40 years. We should have seen that coming. There will be a... point where the critical mass shifts in the direction of what we know to be true, and this critical mass will come about probably by the leadership of somebody we don't even know yet, or a group of people we don't even know yet. I mean, right now, the election of Donald Trump is not about Donald Trump. It's about saving America.
Oh, yeah.
It's about saving America. And people need to get, in my opinion, stop thinking about whatever it is about Trump that bothers them and think about saving America. But I think we'll do that.
I couldn't agree more. It's about a simple thing. If you're going to deny a historical truth, like you and I are talking on the phone right now, I mean, over the radio right now, then you will have no foothold in reality at all. It's hard enough for our youth these days to tell the difference between Luke Skywalker and Jesus Christ.
That's a very good point.
And the reason for that is because they have been denied historical truth. And if you don't have historical truth, Jesus Christ is not different from Luke Skywalker. It's the same thing. And then it's no wonder that we're losing our kids. They're not coming. Because they're confused. And you have to sit down and you say, look, this is we're on the radio. This is a piece of paper. I've got feet. I am here now. My truth, your truth, this is just historical truth. And I think that our election is as crucial to us as the whole thing with the Armenian genocide was, when no one stepped up to help them in 1914. When you have at that time, I'm just going to give this model. You've got France, England, and Russia are world powers. The United States has no part of the picture because we were at home.
Not at that time.
Yeah, we were not involved with foreign things. What happens is they know full well that the Armenians are in lethal danger. I mean, true danger. They knew it for well nigh 30 years. You have Pope Leo XIII, who, by the way, has not been canonized, and I don't know why, but that's a different issue, who's sitting back. He's the one who gets, for the listeners who don't know this, Pope Leo XIII is the one who got the Catholics to read Aquinas again. And he's the one who sat back and said, oops, there's a big problem with modern philosophy because this is going to destroy us if we're not careful. And he sits down and he tries to play power broker. He says to France, you've got to, which is, by the way, at that point, nominally Catholic, you've got to help the Armenians. They're being slaughtered. And they were slaughtered between 1894 and 1896, 200,000.
And it was, were the French in, the French are in, they're not in Syria yet. That doesn't come till after World War One.
No, they were in Lebanon. They were already in Lebanon. They were already in Lebanon. And so, and then the French do nothing, and then the English, again, he's trying to get them to do this. They do nothing. No one does anything. They just ask him for a piece of paper. Oh, don't do that, people, Ottoman Turks. Don't kill them, bad boys. Just sign this treaty. Treat them humanely. And they just keep on killing them. And they're pretending. They know full well what's going on. But they're ignoring the facts. Ignoring the historical facts. This is happening.
And by the way, Siobhan, let me cut in and just say, the way the media is covering all these riots, they're ignoring the facts of the riots. You know, you have these, you know, these three federal police officers in Seattle that may not ever see again because they're shooting lasers directly into their eyes, which seems to me the most horrendous.
How about the fact that our police officers have been dying like flies? How about the fact that in New York City, I left home about 2-3 weeks ago. Do you know how many stores will not reopen?
Do you know in New York City?
Plundering? Yes. Do you know how much plundering was done in New York City?
I do not, actually. A lot.
Hermes was destroyed.
Hermes, really?
Yes. I saw it with my own eyes.
Wow.
I mean, The my own favorite steakhouse had broken windows. And they expect us, the last statistics I saw, which I think was yesterday, was that the number of gun deaths in New York City in the last, has gone up 200% in 1 year. We were the safest city in the United States, in the world, actually.
I was in New York, Siobhan, the night the lights went out back in the, that would have been while I was getting, I guess, the early 80s, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
No, the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And I was probably 1974, that some year like that. And I was standing at Riverside Drive and about 96th Street.
Oh, wow.
To my car, and within minutes, I heard windows being shattered up the street.
Mm-hmm.
Within minutes of the lights going out.
Yeah.
And I got in my car and drove across the George Washington Bridge.
As you should. But you see, we had another blackout, I think it was 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and none of that happened. Giuliani cleaned up the city, right?
He sure did.
But guess what? It's not good. Nope. And I don't think, you see, it's not what is that they're interested in. It's what they want it to become. And what they want it to become is not anything good. It's what they feel they are entitled to.
Well, it's filled with self-contradiction.
Yes.
You know, in other words, you can't get a rational answer. You only get, well, we want to do away with this. We want to destroy this. We don't want this anymore. They have, and when you ask what they would put in its place, they might say socialism. They don't even know what it is.
They can't even spell it. They can't even spell it. I mean, here's the problem is, you know, they talk about fascism versus socialism and this sort of thing. Antifa is apparently anti-fascism.
They are fascism.
Yes, they are, because the ideological roots of fascism and socialism are the same darned thing.
Yeah, that's right.
And this is one of the things Americans, you see, we are a blessed country. We didn't have to worry about these European problems with Marx running wild and all these things. And we don't even have the antibodies for it, because it is so irrational that an American is going to look at this and say, what are you talking about?
Right.
And yet they have our universities.
Yeah. I think it's very significant.
They have no response.
I think it's very significant, Siobhan, that one thing all these riots have in common is shouting, mm-hmm, the top of your voice, mm-hmm, these little horns they blow, mm-hmm, that split people's ears. Mm-hmm. And they overpower the people in front of them with shouting, with mm-hmm horns, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And with just, you know, hateful faces, which, mm-hmm, you know, I guess you get used to at some point.
Mm-hmm.
That in itself is a denial of freedom, a denial of any, you know, dialogue. That represents pure power.
Yes.
And it represents a like you say, a fascist form of political takeover.
And I'm just going to remind those people who are listening to us, just in case you didn't know this, but the Nazi Party is National Socialist.
Right.
And so it's not as though the fascists use a different ideology from the communists. And these Antifa people are demonstrating it every day.
Mussolini's fascism, he didn't want to be part of the Holocaust.
No. Mussolini's not.
He got dragged in at the very end. That's when,
yes, he did.
You know, Primo Levi, for example, that's when he got taken off out of Italy.
That's right.
And in Italy, it's my impression, number one, that for many, many years, the Catholic Church and Mussolini's government kind of worked hand in hand.
Oh, sure.
But that there were not the kind of abuses of power that you saw beginning in 1933 in Germany.
No, you didn't have that at all. Assisi, again, for your listeners, Assisi was jam-packed with Jews, which the Italians were hiding. And so was the Vatican. The Vatican was stuffed with the Jews. And the orders were given to all of the Italian monasteries to take in all the Jews they could. And I think the number of Jews who died, I mean, the percentage was 19% of the Jews of Italy. But that was mostly at the very end, when in northern Italy...
When the Nazis took over the country.
Right. That's right.
And the Italians did what the Nazis told them to do, basically.
Yes. Well, they had no choice. But and so this is the kind of thing that we're playing with. Remembering the Armenian genocide is reminding Christians of a basic fact. Yes, part of our faith is that our own Lord died for us and resurrected, and therefore that we might be called upon to do the same. And he told us this. And we understand this. And we accept this. Nevertheless, we must remember those whom the totalitarian government and the attempt to build a fake nation has
Turkey.
Done away with. And so the ideologies.
So they had to cancel culture.
Oh, really?
Turkey had to cancel culture.
Yes, they did.
In order to create a culture that, to that point, had not existed.
Absolutely. They had to cancel culture, which is, again, look at the scheme in our country. Look at the scheme in our country. We have a group of people who don't care about facts. They're trying to cancel our culture. They're trying to build a whole new nation on top of where we are. But we have one thing in America. We are not lost. All we have to do is stand together and remember the truths upon which we are founded, which are the natural truths, the facts. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, which include life, liberty, and
freedom. Which among these?
Among these, that's true.
Got to get Jefferson's prose right.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Dale. I was very inspired. But, again, we've got to stand up with these historical truths. The cancel culture against the Armenians happened. There is
And it shows where it leads.
That's right. The fake truth. And
leads to people being stripped of their power, their integrity.
Uh-huh.
Of their self-confidence, their self-command.
Absolutely.
We have a lot of, a lot of our young people, they haven't had much of an education. They may not be churched, as it were. You know, in the black community, 80% of all black children are in single-parent homes.
I know.
And, you wonder why there's so much disorder in that community.
Did you see that document from the Smithsonian? I think it was the Smithsonian, where it said that it's white culture that wants families?
Yes, I saw that. And, that was actually not, that was the African American Museum.
Uh-huh.
Put that out on their website, but the backlash was so strong the Smithsonian took it down.
Okay.
And also the heads of the Smithsonian denied having anything to do with it.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, I mean, there was this, there's this document or this creed going around saying that whiteness has to be rejected in all its forms, including nuclear families, including traditional values, including Christianity, including grammar, and
yes,
including any kind of striving for excellence.
Yes.
That where one person is judged to be better than another in that thing, that field or endeavor.
Yes.
I mean, I guess the strike zone is white privilege. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, I guess there are no more balls. I mean, all strikes. You hit someone else across the field, it's still a strike.
Oh, you're at the plate till you're happy, till you're satisfied.
Oh, I see.
It's kind of like having, all the mulligans, you want on every shot.
I've got it. That's what a boring life.
Mm-hmm. I mean, every mulligan I've ever taken, I hit perfectly. I mean, that's just the way it is. You just, all of a sudden, you don't care, and you hit a great shot.
Oh, yeah. Oh. And here I am. I've got to tell you, this is terrible. I shouldn't tell you this or your listeners, because it probably bore them to death. But I'm actually reading through Aquinas' commentary on Aristotle's Physics, because I was trying to understand what Aquinas meant by infinite time. I was not quite sure what he meant because he just pulled it out. And I just thought, all right, let's go through it. You know, it's hard stuff.
Very
hard. You have to concentrate.
Very hard. Much harder than the Summa itself.
It is, by the way.
Yeah.
And there you are. But the joy you get when you're on top of that mountain that you've climbed is priceless.
You may reread a paragraph three or four times before you get it.
Absolutely.
And then all of a sudden,
beginning to get into it. Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I'm writing, Siobhan, time passes so quickly, I forget to eat.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just happy.
I know, when you're giving the best of yourself. It's called real living. And it's not that thing that happens because you're always right and everyone tells you your great stuff. No, you know when they're lying to you.
Yes, you
and
certainly
that's the horrible
do.
Thing.
Siobhan, we got a few minutes left. I wanted to ask you, have you been to Armenia?
I have.
What's it like? We've only got about 3 minutes left. What's Armenia like to go to?
Oh, well, first of all, the lowest point of Armenia is about 3,000 feet high. And you have this grand mountain, which is Ararat, which is where Noah's Ark went landed. And you have the land itself is filled with monasteries. And it's extremely fertile. They have one big city, which is called Yerevan, which is the capital. And the rest is countryside. And the people are of a generosity that is embarrassing to me. Like all ex-Soviet countries, the countryside is very poor because the Soviets couldn't care about the countryside. They just wanted everything to look glitzy and for the system to work. But when you go to one of these villages, if you ever do, they will invite you home and give you everything they have.
Right.
And it's beautiful. They're Christian. I mean, for an Armenian, it's not an option. You are Christian. That's it. I'm an Armenian, therefore I'm a Christian. They're also ready to die for it because they know they might have to. The land is green, very lush, very high mountains. So the highest mountain in Armenia is over 16,000 feet. Great skiing, beautiful, huge lake, lovely medieval monasteries. A great collection of medieval manuscripts. Oh, I'd say about 30,000-40,000 of them. The people are gorgeous. The food is delicious. The landscape is stunning. The history is stunning.
Yes.
Yerevan itself, as a city, right outside of it, is the ancient one, which runs back to about 1,000 B.C. It's stunning. You have to come with me next time.
I'll go. I think this is important for our listeners to realize that we have this this remnant of the Armenian Christian people who are still being threatened with violence and invasion. We need to be aware of this. It actually comes reality to protest loudly and through all the means we have. Siobhan, I want to thank you for being on Church and Culture today.
Thank you, dear.
We look forward to having you back. Just to remind our listeners, Siobhan Nash Marshall's book is called The Sins of the Fathers, Turkish Denialism and the Armenian Genocide, a brilliant, powerful book. And her organization, Christians in Need Foundation USA, can be found on the Internet at what, Siobhan?
CINFUSA.org.
CINFUSA.org. Siobhan, again, wonderful to reconnect with you. We've already got plans for you to come back on the show in a few weeks. So we look forward to talking to you again then.
Thank you, Dave. God bless.
All of you listening, I'll be back in a moment with another wonderful guest. This is D.L. Hudson, host of Church and Culture. Thank you to all of you who have recently renewed your membership. To Michael in Oxford, Jacqueline in Farmington Hills, Joseph in Bloomfield Hills, Nancy in Canton, and William and Susie in Fort Mitchell, Kentucky. You too can renew your membership by going to AveMariaRadio.net or clicking that donate button on the Ave Maria Radio app. Thank you.
Welcome to Classical Conversations on Homeschooling, cultivating a love of learning through a Christian worldview. Here is Classical Conversations homeschooling advocate Lee Borton.